is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. The biggest story that we've seen in a long time, and the memo, was it oversold? Was it as promised? It was delivered to the American people, and I'll tell you, it's a crazy story. You almost can't believe this is happening. It seems to be a John Grisham bestseller, maybe, but no, this is real life we're talking about here. Also, the State of the Union. We're going to do a recap and analysis on what happened to that speech. What exactly happened? A lot of fallout from that with both Democrats and Republicans. We're going to take a look at that State of the Union. The four pillars of immigration. Does this have a chance at all, or is it dead? And, Representative Trey Gowdy. He says, I've had enough. Get me out of here. Another one is leaving Congress, and people are saying, what's going on there? At the end of the show, we're going to take a deeper look into a very interesting story, why California is becoming a third world country. Well, at the top of the show here, we are going to take on this memo here, and joining me as we take a real dive into this story here is Colonel Jim Warshuk is here. He's retired from United States Air Force. He's a career senior intelligence and special missions officer. He served as Deputy Director for Intelligence for U.S. Central Command and has worked on the White House National Security Council. All of Colonel Warshuk's writings you can find right back at America Out Loud, friends. So, okay, Colonel Warshuk, so here's what I got here. So let me get this straight and put out here what I am seeing. So the DNC, the Democratic National Committee there, and Hillary Clinton campaign for president, so they take some phony opposition research from this British agent, Christopher Steele, and they create this document, this dossier, if you will, to bring to a FISA court, which again is a very secretive court. We don't know a lot what really goes on there, but we know what its purpose is. And some article on Yahoo News, I understand, that was created from this phony dossier to obtain a warrant to spy on the Trump campaign. And by the way, I just one footnote for folks to know, this did not happen in Venezuela, Havana, Moscow, or even Istanbul, friends. It happened, in that shining city on the hill, Washington, D.C., in these United States of America. All right, so Colonel Warshuk, the opening bell here on this statement, did I get anything wrong there in the setup to this thing? Was that all correct?
Absolutely, Malcolm, that was correct. I will add one point. When you talk about FISA courts, folks out there need to realize next to the Supreme Court, the FISA courts are probably, along with what you said, very secretive. They are the most secretive and quite powerful. Second to the Supreme Court, they're probably at the federal level the most powerful courts that we have, for obvious reasons, for what they're designed to do. Right. Certainly not what we had happen here. But, that's another discussion.
And it's amazing, Colonel, because we don't really ever hear much at all about the FISA court. And I love your setup there as you explain the relevancy and the importance of this particular court, because it opens up the floodgates. This is really, we're talking about how this opens up the floodgates of anything goes, and they go after whoever it is they're going after. If they approve it and they are an American citizen, that's how you get to these people here. Well, that happened in an opposing presidential campaign, which is unbelievable. What I really am having a hard time, and I think most Americans are having a hard time digesting, is how can anybody, looking at this thing psychologically, how can anybody dispute the facts, Colonel, of what we have here? And furthermore, and one of the opening pieces I want to talk to you about is the classification hoopla of this memo document, which was put together by the committee here of intelligence, or sometimes you question that word intelligence, Colonel, but in any event, the classification hoopla, this is the top secret, this is a state secret, top secret, you can't, no, we can't let the American people see this thing. They simply cannot understand this. This is the most sacred of information. by golly, when you look at this thing and you read the memo, there's nothing that you can see that is top secret other than a lot of lies and BS.
Well, what was top secret and the actual classification was top secret, no foreign, which means no foreign eyes can see it. But what was top secret about it was the sources and methods used to eavesdrop, so to speak, on the various Americans that were looked at, be it General Flynn, be it Paul Manafort, be it any others who were targeted by these entities.
Jim, you're talking about the measures they took to scam the FISA court. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yes, to that degree. The information used to obtain, mm-hmm. or the techniques used to obtain, is classified. That doesn't have to be put in there. In fact, you always hear about protecting sources and methods and intelligence, and this is critical. Right. Those weren't revealed in here, and nor should they be. Mm-hmm. That's what was top secret. The information was not necessarily top secret, only if you connect them together with the sources and methods. So this, what most people don't understand is when this got to the White House, when this was provided to the White House by Congressman Nunes, mm-hmm. this was sent over to the various intel community agencies that are responsible for reviewing it. This is what happened during that 5-day period, roughly, when this was all taken. And they looked at that and said, okay, you can say this, you can say this, you can say this. What they looked at and basically saw, and you saw when you read the 3.5-page document, there were no redactions, there was nothing blacked out. So everything was fine as far as the text of what was in there. The only thing they didn't show were the sources and methods, and that's okay. They didn't need to do that. The information was deemed correct.
Devin Nunes, again, the committee chair there, he says this is just the beginning. He says that this memo is maybe one-tenth of what's to come. That's what he says now. And he said specifically, Colonel, that he has gone to now, they're turning their attention to the State Department. Now, let me say to you, most of us have felt right along that the State Department, we already sort of kind of knew they were corrupt. Even before we suspected the FBI was dancing with the wolves, we certainly knew that the State Department was suspect for a while. For a lot of reasons. I mean, a lot of these recent crises and scandals over the past many years, the State Department has been at the center of a lot of these things here. Are you concerned at all? Because I think I am, that the guilty parties, at this very moment of time, as we are speaking here, that they are going to whatever means they can to cover up the crime, to get rid of evidence, to destroy things. Because there's a lot being said in the media about the what-ifs and the how-comes and what we're going to do next. To me, this is a roadmap for those that are guilty. I mean, let's face it, if you've been guilty of something, these people are probably going to every means they can, including the previous president that you just mentioned. Don't you think that's a bit of a problem at this point?
Well, let me give you an angle that I'm looking at. First, let's talk about the 10%. You know, this was 10% of what is still to come, as Congressman Nunes talked about, and I certainly believe that. I think the next big shoe to drop in the next week or so is going to be the Inspector General's report from the DOJ. That is supposed to be just hellacious in what's been found there. Then there's the State Department. After the State Department is going to be the intel community, and you know, people like Clapper and Brennan, you know, those guys, those characters have a lot of explaining to do too, because they were in on all this. What I will say is they may be trying to cover up, but I believe that information is already in the hands of Nunes. That's why he can say that. He doesn't have to worry about them.
I see.
They may have their own copies of stuff to destroy or...
So you say there's a lot more they know already that they're not...
Absolutely. And this is all by design. And let me also caveat, because I get a lot of discussions, with people. This, I think the Trump team, the Trump campaign and then transition and early administration figured this all out. They had people talking, and they designed a strategy how to go after this. I believe wholeheartedly that, you know, we get a lot of criticisms of Attorney General Sessions. Mm-hmm. He is the guy behind the scenes orchestrating a lot of this is of what's going on. And you have to remember, he is in a den of snakes. Mm-hmm. He is the Attorney General, and all these people underneath him, Rosenstein and everybody who work for him, he's surrounded by these vipers. And so his best effort was to work behind the scenes and not make any major
effort.
Yeah,
you've said that a few times now, and I question it. I hope you're right, but I do question what his involvement is here. But you're saying you're pretty sure of that.
I feel pretty confident that he knows exactly. And for him to reveal and come out and say, here's what we're going to do this week, we're going to remove, that's the worst thing. And another thing is, a lot of people are questioning, why is Rosenstein?
Yeah, let's talk about him. What do you think? As a deputy attorney general, you think they're leaving him there intentionally, strategic again?
Yes.
I see.
Yes.
I see.
And here's why. You know, there's the old adage, keep your friends close, but your enemies closer.
Right, exactly.
This guy is squirming because if he quits, mm-hmm. it's a sign of guilt. If he's fired, it's a sign of wrongdoing on his part. Mm-hmm. They're going to keep him there, and I firmly believe that's to keep him in check, and he realizes that. The last thing he wants, if he quits, his career is done. Not that he's got much of a career left,
other than
in the private sector. I believe they may use him to turn on other people. You know, they're going to
sequester
him in the
that's
private
a good
room.
Point. The Democrats say this is an effort to discredit Special Counsel Mueller. The Republicans say we need a second special counsel to investigate the entire affair. So these are two entirely separate lines that they put out there. What do you think on all that? Because we're getting a lot of this. And then, of course, you got this Adam Schiff. He comes out and says, well, the committee memo was released before giving the FBI a chance for their rebuttal. Rebuttal? I mean, who the hell cares what the FBI says at this point? I mean, their hand is so far in the cookie jar, who would believe them? Of course, that's Adam Schiff and what he says. But what about these two talking points where the Dems and the Repubs are so far apart in regards to special counsel? What happens to this next, Colonel?
I would, you know, my position on this, I think what we really need to see is a federal grand jury put in place now to investigate both the FBI and DOJ. Mm-hmm. Under Obama, they're going to investigate them what they were doing under Obama, because this is serious stuff.
Right. The press itself, the media as a whole, there just seems to be no concern with the press at all about civil liberties. That's gone out the window from what I can see. What about the press here, and what happened to their truth to power and all of that? I mean, they're not even being... They're not even questioning any of this. They immediately became a talking head for, well, Schiff and Adam Schiff and really what the Democratic talking point was. It's pretty obvious, isn't it?
Oh, obviously. Their bias and their ideology is so corrupt.
It's more than
corrupt.
Bias. Yeah, it's bad. It's bad, Colonel. It's even more than bias.
They just can't come to the realization of that. I mean, and this goes to the highest levels of various major
crazy.
Mainstream media, they are so integrated into the political left
that this is
all they have. We'd love to see them come out and say, boy, were we wrong. I just can't see that.
Well, that's why we're doing so. I mean, that's why, quite frankly, that's why Viewpoint this Sunday is on the march to the numbers and listeners we have, because people are tired of it. They're turning off those Sunday's news shows, Warshak. They're not listening anymore. They're not watching them anymore. Hey, listen, James Comey, the former FBI director, boy, he's been a real hoot over the last couple of days. So he came out with one tweet that said, all should appreciate the FBI speaking up. I wish more of our leaders would, but take heart. American history shows that in the long run, weasels and liars never hold the field. So long as good people stand up. Not a lot of schools or streets named for Joe McCarthy. A very, very weird tweet that was followed up with this one, Colonel. That's it? Question mark? In relation to the memo being released. Dishonest and misleading memo wrecked the House Intel Committee. Destroyed trust with intelligence community. Damaged relationship with FISA court. An inexcusably exposed classified investigation of American citizen. For what? DOJ and FBI must keep doing their jobs? What am I missing here? Is this guy, is he on medication of some sort? Or what's going on with the former FBI? I mean, this guy has taken a U-turn so far lost, and I don't think anybody can make sense of it. Talk to me. What do you think?
You know, that was his last gasp of desperation. I keyed in on the fact that, or his comment that the Intel Committee was damaged, and if there was any damage to the Intel Committee, it was the Democrats under Congressman Schiff, who are in total denial
right.
of the law.
Right. Right.
The law has been broken.
Yeah, it
and,
has. Yeah.
You know, they're not focusing on the law. In fact, they're so screwed up. You know, all we heard for years and years of how horrible law enforcement is, all of a sudden yesterday, they're all of a sudden big proponents of law enforcement.
Yeah, you can't make sense of it. You cannot make sense of
it. You can't make sense of it. I mean, they're in denial and they're in a mode of desperation.
Listen, I'm not a partisan ideology driven nut here. I just want the truth, Colonel. The truth will serve me very well. Whatever the truth is, if the Russia collusion thing happened, show us the evidence. Obviously, it doesn't exist. We're happy to look at that evidence. I'm not some blood brother of the president and his campaign. I mean, if they screwed up and messed up, let's hear it. But there's nothing there except all of this opposed and this scandalous research. Listen, here's the bottom line. A moment or so left here. So let's put our crystal ball on a moment here. I love to do this, as you know. I love to step back from these scandals and look at them with open eyes, as you do with me all the time. I mean, listen, speculate for a moment for me. With all the players we've just talked about and the characters here, who will go to jail? I mean, laws have been broken, things have happened, criminal activities have taken place here. Who, or should I say, who should be in jail? Maybe would be a better question to ask you.
Well, I think we'll see jail time or hefty fines and, you know, some degree of probation from some of the key players that we saw, you know, perhaps Sally Yates, and we'll see what happens on Rosenstein and some of those other major players. I keep talking to folks about, I think we'll see perhaps Hillary Clinton. Now, she won't go to jail, but we'll see her turn on Obama and basically say, I did everything he wanted me to do. He told me to do this. I don't know that we'd ever put a former president in jail, but you know, his legacy will be,
you know, what would be the worst
punishment for him.
I have an
to
idea.
Show that the corruptness was so rampant during his
Absolutely.
Administration that he has nothing and he'll go down as the
All right,
worst
listen,
president.
I have an idea for you, Colonel. I don't know if you'll agree with this or not, but a lot of the players who are guilty at the end, whether it's, again, the former President Barack Obama, if he is guilty as charged, James Comey, the Hillary Clintons, whoever they might be, Rosenstein, whoever they are, or whether it's Devin Nunes or whether it's Trump himself, I think we should make the ones who are guilty here, I think we should make them enforce them. Their price to pay for this, to live the rest of their life in Moscow. Well, since they've made Russia the laughing stock here, let's give them a little dose of their medicine.
So, who knows? Some of them might like it.
Yeah, some of them might like it. But that should be, and you know, the last point here to make with you is we're so out of time here, but I want to say to you, the one person that comes to my mind who I think has been an absolute tragedy, and I assume you agree with me, but this is something that just really irritates me, is what has happened to the Honorable General Michael Flynn. Wow.
Well, I see him now being exonerated because, you know, all this information was gathered under false pretenses and illegally used against him, you know, hundreds of thousands
of
dollars.
This is a hero,
expenses.
Colonel. This is a hero.
Yeah,
this is somebody
yeah.
we should put a statue up or name a few buildings or something. But it saddens me as a patriot, as an American here. It saddens me as I think it might many of you listening here, what they've done to General Michael Flynn. I mean, this is This is an honorable, honorable patriot, an American hero, to the likes of some of the biggest names you've seen really in our history. And what they've done with his reputation and tarnishing this man is very, very sad, I have to tell you. Friends, we'll leave it right there. Big thank you, as always, to Colonel Jim Warshak. Listen, we're going to take a look and do a dive here next on the State of the Union. We have a panel discussion coming up here on the State of the Union. It was an interesting talk here. Let's discuss that a little bit more. And also the four pillars of immigration. What happens with all of that next? Trey Gowdy's leaving. And don't forget, we're going to take a really deep look here at California.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Well, next up, the State of the Union. We're going to give you a recap and analysis of the State of the Union. It was almost like you were watching two speeches. When you got done with that thing, there were like two talking points, and you wondered if everybody was watching the same speech or not. But, you know, really, that seems to be fairly typical of these things, though, from what I've seen historically when you look at them. In other words, I don't ever remember in my lifetime a State of the Union speech where, like, you got done with it and the opposing party said, "Oh, man, that president did a great job. We just love what he's doing." Have you ever heard that in your life? Exactly. So same one here. You can chalk this one up to a typical State of the Union where the opposing party that is not in power, they're very negative. But this one, they seem to be extra negative. A lot of frowns and people were upset. Well, listen, we're going to catch up on that. And also these four pillars, the immigration plan, let's see if that's going to go anywhere. And Trey Gowdy says he's had enough. Welcome to the club, Mr. Gowdy. Join the rest of us here. Joining us on the panel discussion here is Dennis Santiago is back with us. He's a global risk and financial analyst. Subject matter expertise includes strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, global stability, as well as financial analytics, bank regulation. George McClellan is here. George's professional career spans 43 years in law enforcement and the U.S. Naval Investigative Service. George is also a political commentator and a weekly columnist on America Out Loud. And, of course, we can't have a panel without having Ava Armstrong. She's a political commentator, radio personality. Ava is an author who writes about the everyday men and women with a focus on patriotism. The speech happens, and the ACLU comes out and says, "All right, the man is just too patriotic." So evidently, the president, I'm not making this up, friends, the president used the word America too much for a lot of people. I'm not kidding you. So he evidently used it more than 80 times. Now, that was the ACLU said, "No, we don't like that." And then there were other complaints about the fact that why didn't he use the word Russia? So you'd almost stop and think that was this supposed to be like a Russia State of the Union speech or an American State of the Union speech? You know, George, I've heard a lot of strange comments and theories from these State of the Union speeches, but that one to me kind of tips the iceberg here, this comment about using America too much and didn't use Russia enough. You know, I guess if you're going to complain about something, that might as well be one of them, huh?
That might explain why he does not have the ACLU write his speeches.
You think, George? You think? Yeah, they're not happy with him at all.
I have. Who cares? You know, it's another one of these issues that doesn't merit the time to talk about it. They made their point. They don't like him using that word so many times. Well, the rest of us don't mind it, and so they have a problem, not the president.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so how do you rate him for the State of the Union speech, George? What do you give him?
Well, that's an 8+.
Yeah.
Out of a score of 10.
Okay. And what was your reaction when you seen Pelosi and company? I mean, I think one of the columns you wrote on America Out Loud was zombie-like. Is that a descriptive you would use?
Well, yeah. They were all in black mourning clothes, weren't they? Their faces were a scowl. Hers was hateful. And,
yeah.
And but also I saw in that face, as I mentioned in that other essay, fear. She sees the future and she's not in it.
Right. Well, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, that's a good way. Why do you think, Dennis, why do you think they're so anti-American, really? Or are they? Or do they just not like the president being too patriotic? Because the president, he comes across as a very patriotic leader. Why do you think that's a problem for so many?
I don't think it's a problem for very many people at all. The fact of the matter is that was one of the best, most popular speeches I've ever heard. I think it's just they don't like him. You know, they don't like the fact that he's found a way to connect with the American people, that he's found a way to get messages to them down to the very lowest ordinary person that you can think of. I mean, the speech was brilliant. The man stole the 2018 agenda away from the entire of Congress, far left, far right, you name it. You know, he is the centerpiece of 2018. Mm-hmm. Between all the things that he did, I mean, you know, asking for legislation to control prescription drug prices. I mean, you know, is that's about a popular issue as you get with people,
right.
You know,
right.
The guy's become a populist. Of course they're going to go like they fancy themselves to be the populace. And then, but do they bring anything tangible? No. You know,
well,
this guy gets
the
up,
thing.
Opens his mouth and there it is, as people things can relate to.
Yeah, that's the thing. You only hear what they seem to be opposed at. You really don't hear what they're for. Many of the complaints coming from Pelosi and company were all about, you know, what they don't like. But we'll talk in a moment here about the four pillars too. But that's another thing. I mean, that looks like a really turning out to be a bad bingo game at this point. I don't know where that immigration plan is going to go or whether we'll ever get that solved. But Ava, give us a quick analysis of your. So George says it's an 8+. I think Dennis gave it about the same thing. He said it was the best speech ever he's heard in quite some time. How about yourself?
Oh yes, on a scale of 1 to 10, that was a 10+. He came from Davos directly to the State of the Union, and it was just a sweeping success. And the thing about his speech was that it was so positive, mm-hmm. and there were so many poignant moments in it where he pointed out Americans who had suffered and overcome great horrific conditions.
Right.
And it was just, it was a very meaningful speech on many levels. And I think this showed the president's heart. It showed his brain, his soul, every aspect of him. And the really interesting part of this was after the speech, 43% of Democrats said that they liked this speech.
Right.
And 72% of independents liked it. So I would say it was very effective. It was
yeah.
very good.
Yeah, and that's a great point to bring out. The numbers on the other side and even in the independents in the middle were very, very positive and favorable for this speech. There's no doubt, but yet the thing about it is you immediately see the fallout. I mean, for instance, the way he got a lot of compliments and kudos from folks, the way he intertwined many of the human stories. Now, yeah, there's been some of that done before, but I don't think anybody has done it as gracefully, as you were just saying, Dennis, and interwove it in the way that they did into the policies and the things that he was projecting. You know, you don't see that often, Dennis, come out that way. And the way he did it, it seemed very natural. It didn't seem like he was overselling that. You know, for example, that couple, those two couples with the two kids that were beaten up with the MS-13 gang members, that was a very powerful, moving moment, maybe the most powerful in the entire. I mean, what happened there in that story is incredible. And I got to tell you, right away, many, many pundits on the other side got crazy and started saying that, like, MS-13 is not even a big deal. I mean, how do you do that? I mean, where did they come off saying that?
Hatred and animus reacting by taking knees and punching yourself in the face with it seems to be a popular thing for the opposition right now. And, you know, they're getting bloody noses from those knee jerks, I'm telling you.
Dennis, do you think they survive this seriously? I mean, honest question. Do you think this party survives this? You know, I've talked before about maybe being at a end road here for this party. Not trying to be a funny guy here, but maybe something else emerges that takes over. What do you really see with this?
Oh, I see. If you watch the tenor of the room, right? I mean, yeah, because they were panning the cameras, and the number of Democrats that you saw wanting to stand and applause, and clearly shifting in their seats because they were not allowed to. Okay.
Yeah, it was a bad scene.
And it was awful. I mean, you know, and so there are. I mean, let's face it, you know, we're all Americans here, right? And the fact of the matter is, Democrats are as loyal to the United States as anybody else. We all love this country. And there is something wrong in Congress in that the congressional leadership has made it so it is impossible, almost impossible, for a regular member of Congress to speak their minds to the way that they were elected to represent. Mm-hmm. And you saw that loud and clear in you look at the Republican side, people are standing up, you know, and they're free. Mm-hmm. And on the other side, these poor people are in prison. I felt really sorry for them.
You know, let me ask you, and then George, I want you to chime in on this. I was thinking back to when Obama was in office, and I was thinking back in the way that the State of the Union speeches. Now, listen. I remember, you know, it's not like the Republicans stood up and were cheering on and, oh, man, like I said, this is the greatest speech ever. And that didn't happen either. But I guess the question I have for you all, was it at a level of anything like this? I mean, think back to that moment of time. Dennis, do you see it as being back before we go to Georgia? Do you see it being anywhere near that, what we've seen here this week?
Oh, something's gone wrong. There's no courtesy.
Okay.
It's onerous is how I would say it. It's visibly onerous
and
divisive, and I don't think it's coming from the membership.
Yeah. So George, what I'm trying to say is, George, when Obama was up there, when he was doing his State of the Union, the Republicans weren't happy about that, and they had some frowns on their faces. George, what was different about that moment and compared to being different about this moment, George?
That was pre-Trump. That was when Republicans were in fear of the press, the media, bad things being said about them. They were polite. Individually, they would make, their frowns. Mm-hmm. But they stood, and they were respectful and to the president.
Mm-hmm.
What the Democrats lack is leadership.
Okay.
Leadership is something of value. And that value Trump brought to the Republican Party, whether they wanted it or not, it is there now. They are now starting to realize this guy hits home runs every time he's at bat.
Right.
Leadership it is something of value, and it explains how the Democrats displaying open rebellion in the State of the Union speech that they are demented and they have no leadership.
Right.
She, Pelosi, you could see her look back at her people and make sure that they didn't stand up or applaud.
Right, yeah. It was very odd.
She rules with fear.
You got that sense,
she's
George.
She's going to be gone.
Yeah, you got that sense. I mean, I can't believe someone, senior members in the party, in the Democratic Party, haven't stood up to remove her. I'm not talking about physically from the State of the Union, although maybe that did cross their minds, Ava. I don't know. But I'm talking about remove her as the minority leader and certainly ahead of the Democratic Party. It amazes me sometimes that she is still in power to the degree that she is. Yeah.
Yes, it is amazing. It's interesting that you're contrasting, how it was when Obama was there. And mm-hmm. I really, truly think, as a Republican myself, I think the Republicans gave in too much. I think we became too moderate and too concessionary with Obama during his reign of terror for 8 years. And now you're seeing the results of that. You're really seeing it
I will tell you this, Ava. The other side, I've had several calls and several communications with strong liberal people, some on our platform and others, over the past day or so. And they are really upset. They are frantically upset. They're terrorized of this memo thing. I mean, they're like, I've never seen anything like it, quite frankly, Ava, where this... it seems like they've become so disgusted with the whole process. And they're really upset. They don't like this Trump. They don't like what's happening. Obviously, they're seeing something entirely different. And of course, Dennis says, well, we're all Americans. He says that, you know, possibly he believes the Democrats do love America as much as Republicans do. Why is there such this divide, is Ava?
I really don't think I'm going to argue with Dennis on that point, because I really think there has been a turning point in this country where there are a great many people who do not love America. They don't love our history. Mm-hmm. They don't love our monuments.
Well, that's a good point.
They don't love our flag. They don't love our anthem. They don't believe in God. And they denigrate the people that do believe in
Well, maybe they like their version of America, Ava, whatever that is. But, you know, there's a point, Dennis, with what she just said kind of hit a nerve with me, because, you know, pulling all the Confederate statues down and all of the, even the president's statues and other things, they want to sort of dismantle that. And there seems to be this uproar happening all over the place where it's like it's almost against everything that is American, you know?
Well, I look at that as there's a lot of people that have never understood what tradition is in America. So they're groping and they're trying to figure out, you know, well, what is it to me? Emotion is not the thing you want to do when you're dealing with government. It's just
that's
it just
a good
gets
point.
In trouble.
Yeah, well, George was saying, if you look at the right side of that that room and you look at the Pelosi and company folks, as you say, the steers and the sounds and the frowns and the, you know, it was something out of a very odd movie that, and they're all dressed in black and these looks. And, I mean, what I can't understand is how do they think that's going to earn them any votes come 2018 and 2020? How is that a forward-looking agenda? Why not take a more optimistic approach or take the high road or do something that's going to come out with more ideas, more policies, more thoughts? And maybe instead of telling us everything that's wrong with Trump, why don't you tell us everything that's right with the country and how you can make it better? Maybe that would be a better psychological approach, but we're not seeing that. All right, George, talk to me on the four pillars. Let's get to the point of this immigration thing. So the president rolled out his immigration program at the State of the Union, again, trying to encourage, put the hand out there to come along. There's a lot of upheaval here right now with this immigration program, whether it's going to be a trade. I guess the question I have for you, is it going to be the DACA program for the wall and then the chain migration and the lottery plan don't really become part of the plan? That's what I'm starting to hear a lot of rumblings about, that the only thing they're going to really be able to come together, he'll get us some part of this wall business, but that's going to be the DACA thing that's going to get almost a couple of million of these people in. Is that the trade-off, or do you think that they get more on these pillars?
Well, the wall has been approved. It just needs to be funded. Mm-hmm. The people like me out here in flyover country, mm-hmm. I think, as I wrote, I don't think he should grant a million people amnesty.
Right.
But he should turn his attention to the 800,000.
Okay.
And make a deal there. And I think that's what he's going to do. He threw out 1.2 million people, and the Democrats refused it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They bit his hand when he extended it to them. He knew they were going to do that. So now he can go back to 800,000 and demand his wall. He'll get his wall, and he will also throw in the chain migration. That absolutely has to be.
Well, they're saying
we cannot have our way.
But George, the Democrats are saying they're not going to give them the chain migration. They're saying that that's going to cut down our immigration program. And Ava, by all estimations, it's going to cut it down drastically, because the largest piece of our immigration is coming in from our cousins, friends and cousins, and three times removed. This chain migration is a big deal, Ava.
It's over 1 million people a year.
Right.
So, and these are people that are unvetted, unknown, and they're also, many are very fraudulent. They say they're relatives, and there are no paperwork to prove it or anything. So I could say that I'm your aunt from, you know, Venezuela or something. I mean, there's just no backup for this stuff. It really has to stop. We've hit a tipping point in this country. Half of the people in this country don't pay taxes. The other half does. And there's a point of no return, and we've hit it. So we've got to ratchet back in many ways. And one of the big, big pieces of this is immigration, especially illegal immigration.
So what's the bottom line for immigration? What happens, Ava, with the four
pillars? The bottom line is Trump's going to give them a deadline. Mm-hmm. He's already said March 5th. If you don't tell me that you want this deal, it's coming off the table. Mm-hmm. And what he will do is he will let DACA expire. I'm predicting this. And he will let that go to the Supreme Court. Okay. The Supreme Court, of course, will rule that it's illegal, and those people will be leaving.
Wow. So you believe, you predict no, there's going to be no coming together for immigration, right?
Well, I think Trump will put each one of those pieces through the Congress. I think he'll have a vote on chain migration.
Okay.
I think he'll have a vote on the visa lottery.
All right. Separate
things. So that's just how I think.
All right. Dennis, it seems to me the president is setting himself up already for 2018, clearly, when he's been very pronounced in recent days saying, okay, listen, if we can't get them to work with us, if we can't get them to come to the table and resolve these things like immigration, then I need you to elect more Republicans to office. I mean, he's been very outspoken in the last few days on that point. That looks to me like that's going to be his policy to his base to try to get the independents in, because he's got the base locked up, but he needs the independents to really, you know, turn the tide, if you will, Dennis. What do you think happens with that in regards to immigration? Do you see an immigration deal happening?
I see an immigration leverage happening. I listen to that thing and I go, okay, he's got the leverage that if they don't come to a deal, as Ava said, you know, it's going to go to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court is going to have to rule under the letter of the law. It's going to be disastrous. I think what this guy did is he set himself up to be the savior of the DACA kids. Mm-hmm. And essentially, right. He's going to get the Republicans to go, we're ready to go for it. We're ready to go for it. The Democrats are going to be in a quandary because they're going, we don't want to do it because, you know, it's our issue. And they're going, no, it's not. And
well, they want to leave it as an election issue, which is what he's been pointing out. Yeah, yeah.
And you know what? Too bad for them, man. Right. That votes passed. Let's move.
Everything's political, Dennis, isn't it now? I mean, really, think about it here. All right, so why are we losing so many politicians? Hey, you know, George, when you and I have talked many times about this, and we talk about a lot on the platform, you know, this country was founded on basic principles. The framers put it in there, and it was that people served our nation. They got into office, they left office. Today, they get into office, fairly average, modestly financially, but they leave there as multimillionaires many times over, and it's not on the salary we pay them. But then when they do leave office, George, they leave in wheelchairs and oxygen tanks. And basically, that's how our program runs, really. And that's how it's always been. So now what's happening now that some of these Republicans are jumping ship, this is kind of brings me back to a real interesting point, George, about, again, the early essence of our nation and the way the framers looked at this thing. It really wasn't designed for people to, you know, get up to Washington, park their ass there, and sit there for the rest of their lives till they deteriorate to ashes. Tell me, what do you think?
Well, that's why they had trains in those days. They could go home and spend a lot of time at home, not just fly back and forth. Yeah, it should not be a career.
Amen.
The only way to end that, of course, is we have a term limit on presidents. We could have a term limit on senators and let the representatives do what they think they can do. But that's not the only danger. You can change out politicians up there, mm-hmm. but you still have that bureaucratic mess.
System.
The people who work the desks and the offices and the phones for the...
You're right. So listen, up next now, we're going to talk about, and it was just mentioned, in fact, in this segment about California. What exactly is going on with California? You remember that old song there by the Mamas and the Papas, California Dreamin'? Well, a lot of people are moving out of the state and saying they're not dreaming anymore of California. It's turning into a nightmare. We're going to take that up next as we take a deeper look as to what exactly is going on in California.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's americaoutloud.com. Where the conversation never ends, with 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
And the sky is gray.
Well, you hear the mamas and papas there, California dreaming. You remember those days, friends, with the gold paved streets and the tall women and, oh, man, the skateboards, surfboards and the Beach Boys and Malibu. Oh, boy, the cop shows out there, Chips. Remember all that? What's going on with California these days? A lot of people seem to be uptight. There seems to be, I think, some of the biggest complaints I'm hearing is the cost of living. I mean, this is a perfect example, from what I hear, of the haves and the have-nots, that you either have a lot of money and very wealthy there, or you're struggling. Seems to be the homeless community is growing substantially. And so very interesting column we have at America Out Loud, friends. Why California is becoming a third world country? Well, we got someone here to answer that for us, the author of that column right here. Dr. Ron Martinelli is here. Dr. Ron is referred to as the expert's expert. He's a well-known forensic criminologist and retired police detective. He's got a show also on America Out Loud, A Thread of Evidence, you hear every evening, 9 p.m. Eastern Time or 6 p.m. Pacific Time if you are in California. Dr. Ron Martinelli, it's good to have you here, Dr. Ron, and let's talk about this California. Boy, I'll tell you, that article you wrote, that is right, the op-ed on America Out Loud, it has garnered a tremendous amount of interest, Ron. It's really, people are very intrigued with some of the points you put in that pieces. I'm hearing a lot of comments, and people are just really want to read it and understand. And you know why I think that is? A lot of people are trying to really understand California. A lot's happened since Reagan left California. I mean, since he no longer is there, clearly. But, I mean, it's changed a lot, Ron. And it's a total different animal now. And I think many people are saying we'll probably never get back there. What's the biggest point that comes to your mind, Ron, when we talk about California?
Well, I think it's just so hard to live in the state of California now. And when people that are residents of California, and I'm a lifelong resident of California that finally escaped and I moved to Texas with my business and with my family, it is that they pay so much tax money and they get so little service back from the state and municipal governments. That's one
thing. Now, Ron,
thing.
Hold on. Let's tear that apart right there. What I want to know from you, that's a great point you just make. What are they doing with all the money?
Well, God knows what they're doing with the money. Okay. I think, for instance, with respect to Caltrans, which is the agency that builds all of our roads and freeways outside of the municipalities, I think it all goes to pensions. And they've got an out-of-control pension system there, and our roads are just decrepit. I mean, as soon as you leave the state of California when you drive, and I frequently commute in and out of the state of California in a vehicle, you find that all the other states that lead into California have much better freeway systems than we do.
So they're not reinvesting it back into the infrastructure, then, you're saying. They're not invest. So what are they spending it on? I mean, is there any idea? Is it the homeless population? Is it what is, I mean, they got to be doing something with all the tax money, because clearly they're one of the highest tax states out there, Ron.
Well, the state is I think the second or third highest state location in the United States, I think, followed by New York and Connecticut. Then I think we get California. But one of the biggest problems we have is the state has been going seriously bankrupt.
Yeah, they got a big debt right now, $247 billion.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's ridiculous. And, $33 billion of the state income goes to illegal aliens. It's just absolutely ridiculous.
So is that where a lot of the money's going then? Is this because they're big on this illegal immigration trade, I'll call it. I mean, they're big on that, aren't they? The politicians out there. Why do they find that so attractive?
Well, I think it to be quite honest with you and be very direct, I think it just widens their base. And politics, and we see this on a national level, politics is not about what helps the American people move forward or what helps the citizens of California move forward. It's what solidifies the political base of the Democratic Party. And so, of course, they have an open borders mentality. It is a sanctuary state, which is quite unique. And when you have $33 billion going to subsidize and support an illegal alien community, including in a legal alien community that's a criminal community, what do you think that the taxpayers of California, how do you think they could benefit with $33 billion right. in their infrastructure?
You know, I got to tell you, you made the most profound statement just moments ago that I have heard anybody say about this problem, and not only in retrospect of California, but the whole nation, of why the political establishment always wins out, because the power that they're seeking, and you said it really well. I got to listen back to that, because I hadn't heard anybody put it out there like that, Ron, and it is so very important, because it's not really to improve our lives, and this is sad, because that's the whole idea supposed to be to get into politics, is to serve the people, the constituents who put you there. Here's what I really don't understand. When it comes to the smart, talented, intellectual people in California, and I've got a lot of friends out there like you have, Ron, a lot of bright people out there, a lot of amazing people out there. It's a great culture. It's fabulous to be out there and spend some time and sort of stuff. And it's a great culture out there. Here's the thing. Why aren't they reeling these politicians in more? Why are they letting them just go? Why are they letting them, well, you know, to take a term that recently the president had used, why are they letting the politicians make and turn California into a shithole?
Well, I've got to tell you that it's because the people that are working, and I spoke about this in my article, the people that are working so hard that they don't have time to become a PAC or a political action committee. They don't have time to demonstrate. They don't have time to write letters and to make calls. And that's a shame. But because they don't have the time and the energy to do it, because they're working so hard to pay taxes and get their families squared away, that it allows the entitled masses that don't have anything else to do because they're not working, they're not producing, to get out there and become politically active. And I think it's just as simple as that.
Ron, where's the tipping point on this? I mean, like, you just left. You just said you left the state with your wife, your family. You said, okay, I've had enough. You moved to another state across the country, mostly to get away from all of the things we've been talking about here. And now, you know, other people seem to be doing that as well. There seems to be an exodus there happening. So where's the turning point for this? Is it when enough of these citizens finally stand up and say we've had enough? Or is it when the politicians screw it up so badly that, you know, there's no saving it anymore?
Well, you know, I'm going to be very pessimistic, okay, because I'm in my 60s now. I've been a small business owner for many years. I, of course, worked in municipal government as a police detective. So I have sort of a global experience with the state of California. And, of course, in my business, I've traveled in every single city there is in the state of California. So I know the state like the back of my hand. I will tell you pessimistically that we are never going to see a change in California, because right now California mirrors demographically those people that are paying taxes, which are 49% of the population, and those people that are not paying any taxes and live on some level of government subsidy is 51%, and they are the voting public. So when you have a voting public that exceeds the numbers of voters as the people that are working to subsidize those people, you're never gonna see a change. And the Democrat administration, whether it's municipal or it's state, are doing everything they possibly can in concert with the federal colleagues, like the Nancy Pelosi's, like the Dianne Feinstein's, to ensure their Democratic base.
Right.
And when that happens, the poor, hardworking, taxpaying middle class and the business owners that make over $250,000 a year, they're just done for. You will never see a Republican administration in the state of California.
Well, that
again
is a dire prediction right there. Maybe it's time, Ron, to create a new rule in California, and that not so much that in order to vote you have to pay taxes. I'm not saying that exactly, but what I am saying that, how about in reverse psychology, that if you take any government assistance from the system, you are not able to vote.
Well, boy, you know, that would be an interesting paradigm. I'm not even sure, because of the way politics are today and how they affect the rule of law, that they would even see that as constitutional. But I'm going to tell you, there's a movement in the state of California right now to divide the state. And there's talk of trying to establish a new state called New California. Right. And that would be all, you know, California's got 58 counties in it. And the New California would be that vastly larger portion of the state of California, absent the San Francisco Bay Area and those coastal counties leading down to Los Angeles.
Right, right.
Okay, that would be the old California. And a studio apartment starts renting at $3,800 a month.
That's amazing.
$3,800 a studio apartment, that's less shocking. Than 900 square feet.
Yeah, that is shocking. Do you think they will get to the point where California will split? Do we see that happening?
I really do think we are going to see that.
Yeah.
The movement is growing, and to be quite honest with you, it makes a great deal of sense. It really does, right, with respect to the environment, with respect to our resources, our water resources, and things like that. It makes a lot of sense.
Right, it does, yeah. Well, again, let me remind folks here that Dr. Ron Martinelli, again, catch his show, A Thread of Evidence, every evening on America Out Loud, every weekday. I mean, you'll find it at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Time. And again, he's got some of the unique stories and cases in forensic criminology. And this is a brand new show, new production. We encourage you all to take a listen. You'll learn some things. It's highly entertaining. And you'll learn a lot about what's happening out there in the industry as well. As well as the fact that Dr. Ron Martinelli is also a columnist and a contributor commentator here on America Out Loud. Friends, again, California dreaming. All we can do is keep dreaming that at some point we bring this thing back, and we're able, because we've got a lot of great people and friends out in California, and it is a remarkable place and establishment. It's always good fun to get out there, obviously, here. Well, listen, friends, I thank you for being part of this production today. And Viewpoint This Sunday will always deliver an honest analysis and opinion on all sides of the political aisle. We don't discriminate against an opinion. The main thing is we are always in search of the out loud truth. All the leaves are brown.